Zaxby's just out-Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sautéed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're going to do it together. Let's get unspun.
Hello, truth seekers, and welcome to this week's Unspun. Today's episode is inspired by the tragic New Year's attack in New Orleans, Louisiana, where a man drove a truck into a crowd and shot at people, killing 14 and injuring dozens. Police found an ISIS flag in his car and content that he had posted on Facebook shortly before the shooting, pledging loyalty to ISIS. An article in the New York Times by Alyssa Rubin puts it this way. The Islamic State has lost thousands of fighters to death or prison and suffered the demise of its self-declared caliphate in Iraq and Syria. But the global reach of the group, also known as ISIS, is still vast, in part because of its sophisticated media output and the people around the world who consume it. On New Year's Day, a man with an Islamic State flag killed at least 14 people when he drove into a crowd in New Orleans. Authorities say there was no evidence that the man, Shamsud bin Jahar Jabbar, had active connections to the terrorist group. But the FBI said he was, quote, 100% inspired by ISIS. It is not yet clear which specific online content Mr. Jabbar may have seen or how else he may have been radicalized. Expert noted that the placement of the flag on the truck resembled one depicted by ISIS in a media campaign that urged followers to run them over without mercy. And authorities said he posted several videos to his Facebook account before the attack in which he pledged his allegiance to ISIS. From online videos to social media platforms, and even a weekly Islamic State newsletter, the group that wants to force all Muslims to adhere strictly to the faith's earliest teachings has a very modern media strategy. So, in today's episode, we're going to tackle something that's pretty much inescapable these days, social media. I've got some studies, articles, real-world stories, and everything, and my goal here isn't just to, you know, understand how social media affects us, but to give you the tools to control the online world a little bit better so it doesn't control you. It's interesting, actually, when we talk about social media, we tend to think of it as one big thing. But it's not really a monolith, is it? Every platform, you know, the algorithms they use, the communities they create, they all have their own quirks and their own potential impacts, for sure. So we're going to be looking at those specifics. Let's get into it. We'll start with something that can be a little unsettling. Social media as a radicalizing force. And before anyone tunes out thinking, oh, well, this is just about teenagers or, you know, those vulnerable people, you should think again. Because this affects all of us. It's easy to think of online radicalization as something that only affects certain people, but really, social media can create these echo chambers. And so, you know, echo chambers, we hear that term a lot, but what does that actually mean? So imagine you're on social media scrolling through your feed. What you're seeing is largely determined by algorithms, and these algorithms learn what you like, what you click on, what you spend time reading, and then they start to prioritize content that they think you'll agree with. They show you more of the same. So it's almost like they're filtering out stuff that challenges your views. And the more that you engage with content that confirms your existing biases, the more your online world becomes this echo chamber where you're only exposed to one side of the story. So it's not just about what we choose to see, it's also about what those algorithms choose to show us. And that is a little scary when you think about it. And this can be especially concerning when you consider how extremist groups are using these same algorithms to target and recruit people. Now, Am I saying that just by using social media, you're at risk of being recruited by extremist groups? I mean, it's not that everyone's going to be recruited, but it's important to understand how these groups operate online, because they're often targeting people who are feeling isolated or maybe alienated, or they're seeking a sense of belonging and purpose. And they use these very persuasive narratives that tap into people's fears and anxieties. They offer really simple solutions to really complex problems, you know, like they have all the answers. Makes you think of like how ISIS used Twitter. ISIS was a masterclass in using social media for recruitment and propaganda. And it's crazy to think about something as simple as like Twitter could be used in such a sophisticated way. And they were very strategic about it. Some of the things they did, they used hashtags to reach specific audiences. They created personalized appeals that resonated with particular things people were vulnerable to. And mostly they were just playing on people's emotions. So they were masters at manipulating the platform and this whole online radicalization thing, but it's not new. It's been evolving over time. It has. Remember those early internet forums, you know, like bulletin boards and stuff like that, where people could connect with others who shared their, you know, fringe beliefs? It started there in a way. It was the early days of finding your tribe online. And even if that tribe was, well, a little bit outside of the mainstream. And then came platforms like YouTube, where figures like Anwar al-Awlaki could use their charisma and their storytelling to spread their message to a much wider audience. And Awlaki wasn't just some random guy ranting online. He was really effective at using YouTube to radicalize people. It was because he understood the power of the platform, and he knew how to use it to reach people who were feeling disenfranchised or were looking for a sense of purpose. And now, we've got all these newer platforms like Telegram, which are even harder to track because they've got encryption and anonymity. And so it's really kind of a constant cat and mouse game, with extremists finding new ways to exploit technology as fast as it develops. And it's not just about ISIS either. We're seeing this with QAnon, for example. There's a rise of live streaming for propaganda. And it's not just people who lean right. Here's an example. Blue Sky is a microblogging app that's replacing Twitter/X for a lot of left-leaning folks, and has also started having the same kinds of problems. In fact, I even saw over last weekend that a misinformation outfit out of Russia called Matryoshka is now mounting campaigns on Blue Sky, and they're trying to turn people's attitudes in favor of Russia and against Ukraine. So honestly, no one is immune, and it's a reminder that online radicalization is complex and it's constantly evolving. So what can we do about it? That's the million-dollar question, and that's something we'll be diving into as we go deeper into the topic. But I've covered some pretty heavy stuff here, and before I go deep into the dark side, let's take a breath and we'll shift gears to something a little bit more uplifting. You know, social media can also be a powerful force for good. It's not all doom and gloom. It's a tool, like any other tool, and it's all in how you use it. Honestly, social media can satisfy so many human needs, whether it's connecting with loved ones or finding a community around a shared interest, or even just getting access to information quickly and easily. We've seen so many incredible examples of social media being used for good. Used for organizing protests and social movements, raising awareness about important causes, even connecting people during times of crisis. Like, remember those events in Morocco back in 2011, Arab Spring kind of things? People used Facebook to organize those protests and demand political reforms. And it was really powerful to see how social media could empower individuals and facilitate that kind of collective action. So it was a pivotal moment, and it really showed the potential of social media to drive social change. And it's not just about big movements either. You can think about how social media can connect people who might otherwise feel isolated. You know, it provides a support network or creates opportunities for people to work together and try new things. There's so much potential for good, and it's just a matter of tapping into it. So that's the positive side. But let's be real. We can't ignore the impact that social media has on mental health. And I got to tell you, this goes way beyond those teenagers are glued to their phones headlines. It's so much deeper than that, and adults are struggling with it too. One place where there's been a lot of research is body image. And that's something that's become so much more challenging in the age of carefully curated social media feeds. Think about how you feel when you're scrolling through, you know, like Instagram or TikTok, seeing all those perfect bodies, perfectly posed and filtered photos. It's really easy to start comparing yourself to those seemingly perfect lives, and that can really mess with your self-esteem. And research backs this up. So a meta-analysis is a look back comparing results across several different peer-reviewed studies. And a meta-analysis is usually considered to be pretty strong evidence. And one meta-analysis on social media and body image found that there's a really strong link between social media use and negative body image. So you know it's not just in your head. There's actual data that shows this connection. The data's there. And that constant exposure to these idealized self-images and those relentless cycle of social comparison, it can really damage self-worth. And this isn't just about feeling a little insecure. No, I mean, it can lead to some serious issues, eating disorders, body dysmorphia, all kinds of mental health challenges. And it's not just about how we see ourselves physically either. It can go beyond that. Social media can create tension in your relationships. One study actually found that using more social media leads to less satisfaction in romantic relationships. I mean, really, it makes perfect sense when you think about it. There's the potential for jealousy. There's the potential for, you know, creeping on your significant other. There's that pressure to present your perfect relationship online, and it can be a recipe for disaster. It can create unrealistic expectations. It can lead to feelings of inadequacy. It's just a minefield. And so this is a good reminder that even those platforms that seem harmless, they can have unintended consequences right here in the real world. And then there's a whole thing about information overload, and that's a big one. It's the constant influx of news and opinions and conflicting information. It's exhausting. It is, really. One study called it information overload and said you can actually weaken your ability to understand things while leading to even more social comparison. And it causes fatigue, kind of like your brain's on overdrive trying to process all this information coming at you from all directions. So no wonder you find too much scrolling just leaves you drained. So I've covered some heavy stuff here, from the potential for radicalization to the impacts on body image, relationships, and even our ability to think clearly. And it's a lot. So what can we do about it? Well, what I'm going to explore in the next part of this podcast is what we can do. I need to take a quick break, and then I'll talk about strategies for being less vulnerable to these negative impacts and how to make social media work for us instead of against us. I'll be right back. Welcome back. So where were we? Trying to figure out how to make social media work for us and not against us. How do we protect ourselves from all of this negativity? One of the most effective strategies, according to research, is something called mindful consumption. So let's break that down. It's really about being aware of the content you're engaging with and setting boundaries to protect yourself from things that are harmful or upsetting. Basically, being picky about what you let into your digital space. This starts with noticing what triggers those negative emotions for you. So maybe when you look at a certain account, it always makes you feel bad. Maybe it's accounts, maybe it's certain topics, you know, whatever it is. Once you figure out what those triggers are, you can take steps to limit your exposure to them. So you can do things like unfollow those accounts, even if they're family or friends. And I know that feels kind of harsh, might feel awkward, but you do have to prioritize your own well-being sometimes. And remember, you can always explain to them offline. This can be true for stuff that you, you know, hate watch or hate listen to as well. If you're looking at it because you just need to know what this person is saying because they have these crazy views, maybe don't. On the flip side, you can also think about what makes you feel good online. Like, you know, those accounts that make you laugh or teach you something new. You can actively seek out that kind of content. Oh, and hey, you remember those echo chambers we talked about, those algorithmic bubbles? One way to pop those bubbles is to actively seek out diverse viewpoints. So follow people who disagree with you. And I know that sounds a little scary. I get it. It can feel uncomfortable, but it is good for you. It helps you grow and be more open-minded, so a little discomfort can equal growth. And that's true for a lot of things in life, not just social media. I know that advice seems a little contradictory, right? To avoid stuff that makes you feel bad and to follow things that disagree with you. And the secret is to find people who you disagree with their ideas, but maybe their tone doesn't trigger you quite so much. Now, another big challenge with social media is that it can be super addictive, and it's easy to fall down these rabbit holes where I'm just scrolling endlessly, you know, scrolling the scroll hole. And I know it well, you know, one minute I'm checking the time and the next minute it's been an hour and I don't even remember what I saw. It's kind of like a black hole for your attention. So setting boundaries here is also really important, you know, maybe like a time limit. Decide how much time you actually want to spend on social media each day. Now, this takes practice, but a lot of phones and apps have built-in features where you can set limits. This can be helpful, and sometimes a total break can be good too. A break like a digital detox, you know, like a cleanse for your mind. That's the idea. So step away from the screens for a few days a week or reconnect with the real world. That can help as well. So we've got mindful consumption, finding those good accounts, setting those boundaries, and taking time for those digital detoxes. The next one is important, even though it's simple. Remember that social media is just one small part of your life. It's not the whole thing. make sure you're investing time and energy in things that bring you joy offline. Finding balance and not letting the online world take over. And that can help you to do something that's really important, which we would call building resilience. The more you focus on your well-being outside of social media, the less those negative impacts online are going to affect you. So what does that look like practically speaking? Well, it's different for everyone, but some key ingredients include strong relationships in the real world, doing hobbies that you enjoy, taking care of your physical health, basics like that. And these basics are important, but we often overlook them. And it's easy to get caught up in the online world and to forget about real life. So you can maybe think about setting some goals around these things. You know, if you like to read, maybe I'm going to read for 30 minutes every day. Or maybe I'm going to text two friends this week and check in with them, that kind of thing. And don't forget about your mental health. Things like mindfulness, meditation, maybe even therapy. We need to build up those resilience muscles so we're less likely to get swayed by all those pressures and influences on social media. And one of the best ways to do this is to practice self-compassion. This basically means being kind to yourself and cutting yourself some slack. I know I need to do more of that, especially when I'm scrolling through social media and comparing myself to everyone else, and maybe you do too. Because remember, what we see online is often just other people's highlight reels, the curated life. It's not the whole picture. Everybody struggles and everybody makes mistakes. And even though seemingly perfectly influencers, it's so easy to forget that they're human too. So focus on your own journey and celebrate your own unique qualities, both online and off. Be true to yourself. And one last thing. What about what we're putting out there, what we're sharing online? That's a whole other aspect of this. We've talked about being mindful of what we consume, but what about what we create? That is just as important. So we've talked about taking control of our own social media experience, being more mindful, setting boundaries. But what about the bigger picture? Social media is extremely huge now. Most people get most of their news from it. Many people run almost all of their relationships with it. And when that happens, it's not just affecting individuals, it's shaping society. What can we do to create a healthier, more equitable digital world? And that feels like a huge question. And it is a huge question. Where do we start? I think it starts with remembering that we're not just passive users. We actually have a voice, and we can demand better from the platforms, from the countries that run them. We can start by holding these companies accountable for how their platforms are designed and the algorithms they use. One thing we need is more transparency, knowing how these algorithms work. Because right now, it feels like we're all part of this big social experiment, but we never really consented to it, did we? And we need to understand the risks involved. We can advocate for policies that put user well-being first, you know, people over profits. Because right now, companies prioritize engagement and profit over the well-being of their users. And I have to say, in a way, I don't blame them. They are businesses, and the purpose of a business is to make money. But that is also where we have the power, because without the users and the creators, they don't have a way to make money. A platform by itself with no content is nothing. I think X is learning that lesson right now, and other platforms can too. Remember how we talked about social movements earlier and about how people can come together and demand change? That same power exists online. Social media can be a great tool for collective action, so we can use those same platforms to push for change. We can organize, raise awareness, pressure the companies to do better. And it's not just about demanding changes from companies. It's also about changing how we use social media ourselves. So you can make a choice to support platforms and to support creators that align with your values, but with your clicks, so to speak. And you can choose not to use these platforms in a way that makes you a mindless consumer, but in a way that benefits you and others being a conscious creator of content. Another really important piece of this is media literacy. You know, education. We've touched on this a bit, but why is it so important in the bigger scheme of things? Because it gives people the skills to think critically about what they see online. Especially now that we're all immersed in this digital world, we need to learn how to spot misinformation because there is so much of it out there. Everyone needs to learn how to identify bias so that you don't just blindly believe everything you see online. So we need to equip ourselves with the tools to be, you know, responsible digital citizens. Media literacy is like a foundation for a healthier world. And that's why I do this podcast, Truth Seekers. And as you find things like this and others, please share them. I've covered a lot in this deep dive from the dark side of social media to these maybe glimmers of hope for a better future. And I'm walking away feeling a mix of, I don't know, concern, hope, maybe even a little bit empowered, knowing that I don't have to be powerless in all of this. It's complex and constantly changing, but we do have a role to play in shaping it. So to all of you, stay informed, stay engaged, and keep these conversations going, because the more we think about it, the better equipped we are to be a force for good. Thanks for coming to Unspun this week. If you're so inclined, a quick rating or review on the podcast platform you're listening to me on right now helps other people get media literacy training. But in any case, I really appreciate you. Have a great week and stay sharp. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone.